The 920 KVEC Podcast Network is presented by the Slo County Real Estate Podcast with Hal Swayze. Up-to-date information on the local real estate market on your time. New episodes weekly at the podcast link at 920kvec.com and wherever you get your podcasts. California DRE 01111911.
There'll be days like this, when there's no one complaining. There'll be days like this, everything falls into place like the flick of a switch. Well, my mama told me there'll be days like this.
3:07 on the Central Coast. It is Thursday, March 14th, 2024. I'm Dave Congleton, welcoming you to another edition of Hometown Radio. I want to start by thanking Bill Ostrander and our own Craig Hill for covering the show yesterday as I went off for a series of eye exams. It looks like sometime in the not-too-distant future, I'll be going in for yet more eye surgery, but it's all good. More good news. We are here all the way until 7 o'clock on this broadcast today. At 4:05, Leanne Standish checks in from the San Luis Obispo Museum of Art, and I believe she's bringing with her their newest board member, Lindsay Harn. Where have I heard that name before? Joel Brittingham at 4:30 checks the economy. At 5:05, Lance Parker reacts to the article in the Tribune. Surprise, surprise, Slo County is behind in meeting affordable housing goals. Let's talk. And then Larry Newland introduces us to the concept of bare boating. It's not what you think. It is a Dave Congleton show, always your hometown radio talk show. First up, always a pleasure to visit with Dr. James Papp, author, architectural historian. His latest book is called Slo County Architecture. He joins us in studio. Dr. Papp, how are you, sir?
I am in studio. I'm just fine. A beautiful spring day. Shout out to all your listeners.
Remind folks about your book, please. Slo County Architecture. How can they find it? What's it about?
Obispo County Architecture. You can find it at all fine boutiques. I'm not sure that that's the case. I mean, it's hard to find a bookstore these days, but there are a few of them around, and I think CVS stocks it's Images of America. And if they don't have mine, ask them to order it.
And yeah,
you can also get it off of Amazon. You can also send me a picture of Andrew Jackson. 964 Choro Street. If an envelope arrives with a picture of Andrew Jackson addressed to me, I will send you a copy of the book.
Don't forget the return address, though.
Oh, History Center also has them. And all the proceeds to the ones on sale to the History Center go to the History Center. So that's a nice little bonus for them.
As we segue into our topic for today, let's remind folks of the little controversy around the cover of your book.
Oh, yes. You know, I always love controversy. So it was very interesting working with this company, Arcadia Press. They basically took over the market for local history, which was all being done by, you know, individual small presses. And so now they basically do it all over the world. They also have a branch in Europe, although that has split, but the books look the same. So I thought, oh, these people are going to be very profit-minded, and my insistence from the beginning was I want Hearst Castle to be on the cover, because 280,000 people live in this county, but 800,000 people a year visit Hearst Castle, and I want them to buy my book by mistake. Thinking, oh, what a wonderful book about, you know, Hearst Castle, and then they find all this other stuff about the county. Hooray. So I submitted 9 pictures of Hearst Castle, because you're allowed to submit 9 pictures, and they rejected them all. And they and I said, so what's wrong? And they gave various slightly ridiculous reasons. Said, we'll put this on the cover. And it's a picture. The one they wanted to put on the cover was a picture of 3 very unhappy people in front of a house sometime in the 19th century that has probably been since torn down, and nobody really knows where it was. I used it as an illustration of Italianate architecture on a modest scale. But they're used to that because, you know, they do Okefenokee County, you know, history and so on, which always has very glum people on the cover, because who wants to live in Okefenokee County when you can live in San Luis Obispo?
But why put people on the cover of a book about architecture?
I don't know that. It was just their thing. As I've described to people, it's a bit like publishing a book with the DMV. It's all about the rules, and it's not about, you know, what is the end result. But it got me to thinking, their actual standards, as I pointed out to them, was they wanted something for the cover, which was an iconic building or place that everyone would have some emotional identification with. Either usually these books are about towns, like there's one on Avila Beach, there's one on Arroyo Grande, et cetera.
Every town has one.
Yeah, every town has one, but this is about the county. And you know, it gets me to thinking, because I'm an architectural historian, and often I have to make the distinction for people between an old building and a historic building. And a historic building is an old building that has significance. That means that it embodies a particular architectural style. It's designed by a particular master architect. Something important happened there, or someone important lived there.
But is that to be determined by an outside party?
Yeah, I mean, basically what happens is you get a professional person like myself to come in, and by the standards of the profession. So for instance, George Washington was born there usually, or you know, had one dinner there, usually not good enough. The standard is that it really has to be occupied for a generation, like 10 to 20 years, by the person who was significant. Also, that they did a significant thing, you know, the reason they're significant is the thing they did while they were there, not just that they retired there or they were born there or something like that. So there's all kinds of, you know, ways to winnow it down, because ultimately every old building would be historic. It has significance to somebody. Sure. So you have to figure out, does it have significance to the large trends in American history, for instance, or someone who was a leader of their profession? Someone was trying to list a building because it had the woman who owned it was a single mother and was a seamstress. And our determination was no, because if she had been the head of the Ladies' Garment Worker Union, yes. But just because you're a single mother, that's interesting, but it doesn't make you special. Every single building could be listed on the basis of something interesting about the person who lived there.
So give us an example of a locally registered historic building. Other than Hearst Castle.
Other than Hearst Castle, there's loads of them. One of my favorite is the Fremont Theater in San Luis Obispo. Actually, one of the problems, and here's a bee that I have in my bonnet, I recently sold, because I used to live on the East Coast, and I had a mud house in Poughkeepsie. That sounds like a joke. It was a bit of a joke, but it was mud-walled for insulation with clapboard on the outside, circa 1800, judging by when the nails in the building were from. It was, while I owned it, I got it on the local historic register because it was one of the few mud-walled buildings left. That's in Dutchess County, and Dutchess County is notable for having, I think, the second highest Lyme disease rate in the country. Good reasons to stay out of it. But also, it has about 350 buildings on the National Register of Historic Places versus San Luis Obispo County, which has the same population and only has about 35. So why do they have 10 times as many? Is it because they have 10 times as many historic buildings? Oh, no. Are they 10 times as many nationally significant buildings? Oh, no, because the National Register of Historic Places is a national register of locally significant buildings. Hmm. If something is nationally significant, it becomes a national landmark, which is a different designation. So, you know, the Hearst Castle is a California state landmark. But
the Fremont is a local?
Fremont is local.
Landmark?
There are a number of things that are local landmarks that I think, it's not even on the National Register as far as I know. There are, so I would really like to get more stuff on the National Register in this county so that we can, and many of the things we have are of statewide or national significance. They are the first of their kinds. The Morro Bay Power Plant is a fabulous example, which is currently slated to be torn down. Not only is that by a very significant architect, William Gladstone Merchant, who helped Bernard Maybeck design the Palace of Fine Arts up in San Francisco, went on to design many, many important San Francisco Bay Area buildings. But also it was the first industrial desalinization plant because they needed fresh water.
So you don't want to tear down the stacks? You want the stacks preserved?
Well, that's a really interesting question, because which is it the stacks? People from Morro Bay tend to see the stacks at a distance coming home, and they say, "Ah, you know, now we're home."
Yeah.
They have less association with the building. The building is very important, but from my perspective as architectural historian, the building was designed to have two stacks to look like the temple at Luxor, to look like an old Egyptian temple.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, it's exactly the same design as an old Egyptian temple. It was ultimately built with only one stack. And then it was expanded to three stacks. So has our two standards in historic buildings are, is it significance? And number two is, does it have the integrity to communicate its significance? Is it still clear why it was significant? I would say with the Morro Bay power plant, even though it was altered, it still does have that integrity. It still has that wonderful glowing aluminum skin. If you're ever by it during a sunset, it's just amazing.
Glowing may not be the term you want to use.
Oh, No, it's not nuclear. Diablo, can you? That's a different matter.
Dr. James Papp back on this broadcast, architectural historian extraordinaire and author of the relatively new book, Slow County Architecture, available however you get books. We continue the conversation right here on AM 920, FM 96.5 News Talk, KVEC. Tomorrow, Attorney Stu Jenkins is going to urge everyone to participate on a grand jury. Also, Jack Keller speaks his mind. That's the only way to set that up. We are with you weekday afternoons from 3:05 to 7 o'clock on KVEC. I'm Dave Congleton. Back in conversation with Dr. James Papp, architectural historian, author of the new book, Slow County Architecture, However You Get Books. And Dr. Papp is on a search to identify what he calls the historic buildings of the county.
Yeah, it bothers me that we have so few buildings here listed on the National Register. We know about them, but the rest of the country doesn't, which is too bad. And it's ironic given that Hearst Castle is possibly the most important historic house museum in the country, next to, I would say, Mount Vernon in its significance, or possibly Monticello. It's a really, really important building. We have got all these important buildings. But let me set it up this way. A few months ago, I was invited by the Morro Bay Planning Commission to talk to them, to talk to the city council, and to talk to the people in Morro Bay about the Morro Bay School, which originally had been slated for redevelopment for
housing. Morro Bay School.
Yeah. It's a lovely school built by two different architects, L.M. Crawford, who was a Santa Maria-based architect and did a lot of buildings in this area, had a branch office up here, a lot of schools in particular, many of which have been torn down, some of which people want to tear down and some of which are still standing. And then Frank Wynkoop, who was a very interesting, more modernist architecture, who built additions to it. But what was so interesting, I came in and talked about the significance of Crawford and Wynkoop as architects, but then people talked about the significance of the buildings to themselves because they had all been to school there. So, you know, it really resonated with them on a very emotional and heartfelt basis. But that is not the basis that the profession of architectural history records buildings on. A building is not significant because you happen to like it or you have, you know, fond feelings of it. It's, again, significance of the architect. It embodies a particular style of architecture. Some important event happened there. So, any rate, the people in Morro Bay I've been talking to about doing what's called a historic resources survey, where you actually record what all the historic buildings are. So at least you know what you have and can then take the next step of trying to preserve them. Such a survey was done in Arroyo Grande about 10 years ago, and they brought in an outside firm called Page and Turnbull, which is sort of my bête noire. It's a big corporate company that I think no longer does a very good job. And the only part they really surveyed was Branch Street, which is an amazing street. Anyone
Great street.
Who has
right
been
downtown.
There, it's just this wonderful eclectic collection of buildings. And after building, Page and Turnbull described as, let me rephrase that, dismissed as commercial vernacular, which is a term that the architect Robert Venturi, came up with to describe the Las Vegas Strip in 1974, i.e. buildings that were either in the shape of something like Tale of the Pup or Randy's Donuts down in L.A., or buildings that were essentially shells for enormous signage like you get in Las Vegas. So now it's become a very popular term for architectural historians who look at a building and can't quite figure it out. They just say, oh, well, it's commercial vernacular. And what was so interesting, they identified three buildings that way, amongst others. But the three that stick in my mind are a beautiful, beautiful Los Sparrows sandstone building, Richardsonian Romanesque. There's a cafe in there. Its official name is, and I have to look at my book, the W.P. Carman Building. But used to have Village Hardware. Maybe it still does. I don't keep track. I think now maybe there's a bookstore where Village Hardware used to be. But it's built of this wonderful local sandstone that was being marketed at the time all over the country as they were comparing it to Caen stone, which was the stone that they built English and French cathedrals out of in the Middle Ages. So it has all these wonderful muscular arches. And then the next one, they also called commercial vernacular, was the Old Village Grill. And anyone who knows hamburgers knows the Old Village Grill because that's fabulous hamburgers.
Yep, absolutely.
Well, that building was originally the Arcade Grocery. What's with the arcades? Well, if you look at that arcade there in front of that building, it's stucco, but it's built very thick as if it's supposed to look like adobe. It's a reference to the missions up and down the coast and their arcades. So it's specifically Mission Revival. And again, they said, oh, commercial vernacular, as if it's nothing that can be identified. And then the third one was the old Bank of America building, which was built as a modernist building right across the street on the same side of Branch.
So were any of these buildings actually in danger of being demolished or taken down?
None of them is. None of them has been historically listed, is the thing. Yeah. And what they said in this report was that these were all eligible to be listed locally, but not listed on the National Register. Well, if something is eligible to be listed locally, it's eligible to be listed on the National Register because the National Register is a list of locally significant buildings. So, it just offended me to my core, as I occasionally get, that you have these high-priced people from San Francisco come in and say, well, basically, none of your buildings is an identifiable style, and none of them is important, and you've paid us a lot of money to dismiss what we know is really extraordinary architecture. And one of the things about Arroyo Grande that I love is that it has the best collection of East Lake buildings in south of Pacific Grove. And East Lake is a very strange style based on cabinets that were supposed to look like medieval cabinets.
I thought before we go to the news, you mentioned earlier about Poughkeepsie and how they have so many more landmarks. I'm wondering if that's because there's so much more Anglo history there, that so much was happening out east before it was happening out west.
I don't think so. I think it's because when the National Register was coming in, they just got on that ball. Okay. You get different communities that have different levels of interest in historic preservation.
We're lazy.
I think the National Register just doesn't register with us so much.
Yeah.
And ironically, and I think it should, because it is a way for a community to say to the nation, we've got something worthwhile.
And we have something worthwhile. We've got Dr. James Papp on the show.
Put me on the register.
He is the author of the brand new book, Slow County Architecture. We got news, traffic, weather, more of the conversation straight ahead. I would stick around. my manners, we need to take a moment and welcome Kristen, the divorce coach, to Hometown Radio. We're so glad that she's on board. She's been on the show before. She'll be on again. So, yes, if you're, and I've been through divorce, so you need a coach, I would definitely contact Kristen. Still to come on this broadcast, Leanne Standish at 4:05, Joe Brittingham at 4:35. It is the Dave Congleton Show, always your hometown radio talk show. We continue our conversation, meanwhile, with author and architectural historian Dr. James Papp. The book is out and about as we speak, Slow County Architecture. So let's set this up as we're getting ready to invite our callers. What do we want them to think about?
Think about what's important to you in your physical environment. And it can be a building. It can be a landscape. It can be an industrial landscape, an agricultural landscape. It's, you know, I think these, as our environments are, you know, our environment is always changing.
Right.
But it's important that we not lose things that are meaningful. Sometimes it's very clear to everyone that something is very meaningful. And sometimes it's not clear at all until it's gone. New York had this moment with Penn Station, which was this gorgeous McKim, Mead & White building. And they decided to tear it down and build this really ugly thing in its place. And emotionally, they should go to a divorce coach because they've never gotten over that.
So are we talking about buildings or businesses?
Well, that's an interesting question. We talked about this during the break. We talk about all sorts of exciting things during the break. Often people, what cities can do is preserve physical structures. And they have that power because of a 1923 Supreme Court decision that said cities can do what they want for the welfare of their populace, which means if you walk down the street and you see a historic building and say, oh, that looks really nice, or that reminds me of significant things that have happened in this place, then that is considered to be a good thing. We don't have the ability, municipalities, to preserve businesses. There are municipalities who try to help, e.g. San Francisco has a heritage business program, because often it is the business inside the building. It's not necessarily the building of Scrubby and Lloyd's, but it is the hamburger that was served by Scrubby and Lloyd's or Riley's department store.
It wasn't the building itself. It was the business.
Yeah. So there can be, you know, just... You know, I think of Coalesce Bookstore, which has been in different buildings in
Morro Bay.
In Morro Bay, and has this very important connection to second wave feminism. It's a really important business, and it's a lovely business. I love to shop for books there. They're just wonderful people, and they do wonderful things for the community. But is the building significant as a landmark? And of course, their first building is, I think, not there anymore.
I believe you're right. So, I mean, there are the famous ones, Hearst Castle, the Mission, the Fremont Theater, even the like the Atascadero City Hall, I think is a magnificent building.
It is a magnificent
building. Those are the obvious choices.
That's a really interesting building, and Atascadero had more of those. Atascadero, of course, was built as a utopian community, as a utopian all-white community by a kind of a slightly skeezy guy. I'm not sure why I said slightly. E.G. Lewis was a problematic personality, but they had this vision when Atascadero was being built of Palladian architecture. And the Atascadero City Administration Building is just this remarkable building that combines buildings by Palladio and by the Earl of Burlington in England and by... also our own Thomas Jefferson, all of the changes they made to that particular kind of domed building. It's really
remarkable. See, I'm stuck on this because I tend to think of businesses more than building.
Yeah.
And I'm attached to businesses, and then the businesses leave, and the building's still there. But, you know, I give you an example. We were talking in the break about life in the 1980s and how glad I was to survive and come here in the 80s. Leon's Bookstore. Leon's Bookstore, I don't even know what's there now. I think it's a furniture store. Haven't even walked in. Leon's was just a used bookstore, aisle upon aisle about used books, and then they closed down. I'm sure the building is fine, but it's not Leon's.
Yeah, and then Leon's went online, and then the last remaining vestige, they've sold most of what they had online to Phoenix.
Yeah, so I tend to miss businesses more than buildings.
Yeah, but are there, you know, you sort of walk out and there's something in the landscape that until it disappears, you realize, oh, that was important to you. The interesting thing, actually, about Penn Station is the basement part of it is still there. You go and catch your train, and you see the old substructure, but the superstructure, which looked like a wonderful, like Roman baths, you can see it in Hitchcock's Strangers on a Train.
That's right.
There's some iconic scenes as Farley Granger leaps into a cab at Penn Station, goes to the Forest Lawn.
So give us a local one that's not an obvious choice.
Ah, one that's not an obvious choice.
I mean, not Hearst Castle, Fremont. We know those.
You know, a kind of a controversial one, I think, is would be Madonna Inn. I think Madonna Inn is a really important building and should be a national landmark. And I have suggested the same to the Madonna family. And but people tend to be distrustful. Oh, if we become something, we won't be able to make changes, which is not true. But, you know, you put me on the spot here, and now I'm trying to think of obscure, important buildings.
Doesn't have to be obscure. Is there a building in the area that you would hate to see be destroyed? Is there one that you would stand there in front of the bulldozer and say, oh God, not on my watch?
Yeah, it's not my watch anymore, unfortunately.
I'll go with one. Go with the Del Monte Cafe. All right. That used to be a grocery store.
Yeah.
All right. And I don't know if that makes it historically significant or not, but to me, it represents that era of small, independently owned neighborhood grocery stores that went on to become a very successful restaurant.
And all of those neighborhood grocery stores, including one I did manage to get landmarked, which was the Tiny Mart, which is now actually that's a fraught question because that's now Doobie's. What is it called, that sandwich place? High
Street Deli.
Yeah, and he's removed the Eskimo Pie sign, promising that it's going to come back, but it's not going to be the same one. I don't know what's going on there.
It's not going to be an Eskimo anymore.
And he's also changed the, against my advice to the city, he's also changed the siding. So who knows how much of that is going to survive. But what's significant, and I think one of the reasons those resonate with us, most of them are now sandwich shops or delis around San Luis Obispo. I don't know about other communities, is that those corner groceries represent, as you say, a particular time when you would go to the corner grocery instead of to a supermarket.
Lincoln Street Deli is another one.
Yeah. But in the case, they were sort of last survivors of what's known as a false front commercial, Western false front commercial. Those buildings that have a peaked roof in the back, but the front is a rectangle. That you could paint a sign on, though they didn't always paint signs on. And that is a form that goes back, at least into the 1850s, into the Old West. And when the Old West used to be places like Cincinnati, it wasn't very far west, but that was the frontier. And they seem to have been designed to resemble masonry buildings, because it was seen that a business building had to have that square front to it. And so they would put up that false front. And actually, now you do make me think of a building, a very modest little building, which is for sale in Morro Bay. Just as you come into Morro Bay, there's a little sort of triangular park, and it's right next to it. And it used to be, I think, a printing press in there. Oh, it used to be a newspaper in there. And the style of it is what we call idicular or tabernacle style. And it's a style of front that goes all the way back to the earliest Italian Renaissance buildings. Brunelleschi designed this tabernacle front, and lo and behold, it's on this little building that used to be a newspaper in Morro Bay, and I think that's very threatened because someone's going to want to buy that and build something else.
Well, I sure instead. Hope not. We are in conversation with Dr. James Papp, author and architectural historian. The book is Slo County Architecture, available however you get your books. We'll come back for a final segment. We're live, we're local, we're hometown. All right, we're entering our final segment with author and architectural historian Dr. James Papp. The book is Slo County Architecture. We're talking about buildings here on the Central Coast, buildings that we think should be preserved. We welcome your phone calls, 805-543-8830 or 800-549-5832. Are there buildings that we should be talking about? Rick weighs in from Templeton. Hey, Rick.
Hi there.
Hi.
Hi, Rick.
Hi. Hi. You know, just recently, within the last couple months in Atascadero, there's a building across the street from the pawn shop, and it must have been either a grocery store or maybe a dairy outlet.
Yeah.
But it had a great big painted sign on the side of it that said Arden. But anyway, just recently they painted over and turned the building into an arcade, and that... I was really sorry to see that Arden sign get painted over.
You know what he's talking about?
Yeah, I mean, signs are really important, and some cities do have sign, historic sign designations. The Eskimo Pie sign on the side of the High Street Deli, which was Tiny Mart, which was a bunch of other things, it came in the 1940s, and the Foremost Company sent around people to paint Eskimo Pie signs everywhere, and then... most of those have vanished, and when my late landlord Alex and his wife Annie Goff and Ann Gaby and her husband, whose name I do not know, bought the Tiny Mart, they pulled off some siding, and lo and behold, there was the Eskimo Pie sign. And so they decided to preserve it, and it decayed, and they repainted it, and so on. That would have been from the 1940s.
Oh.
So, you know, and then the renter of it for High Street Deli got very excited because a woman claiming to be an Inuit called up and said, I disapprove of that during the Black Lives Matter protests. And so we had a big kerfuffle. And, but yeah, that seems to have disappeared. And signs are very fragile. I mean, you paint them and you don't get them back.
That was an old painted sign probably from that era. It said Arden, the Arden Milk Company. Another thing, there used to be a big mural in the coffee shop of the Paso Robles Inn. It was the most beautiful mural of Spanish people, in early Spanish days here in California. When they remodeled that inn, they painted over that mural.
Yeah, it's really awful. You can actually...
That mural was probably 20 feet by 4 feet, I would say. It went right over on top of the wall where the people sitting at the counter and the stools faced it.
You know the mural?
I don't know that mural, but it's so sad because once you paint over something, unless you do it properly, it's almost impossible to remove, and then people forget that anything is there. I remember my father, who grew up in Massachusetts, mentioning how one of his favorite stories was they painted, during World War II, they were afraid that the gold dome of the State House in Boston would become a target for German Messerschmitts, so they painted a black over the gold, and then they couldn't get the black off.
Oh, dear. So. Rick, good to hear from you. Thanks for the call. 805-543-8830 or 800-549-5832. Dr. Papp wants to know what buildings we have on the Central Coast that we should be preserving. You mentioned the Al Lewis store. I would assume that that's already preserved.
That
must be on the list.
It was slated to be knocked down by the city. They condemned that entire block of Chinatown, of which that was the only masonry building, and all the other buildings were wood false front buildings, like all those, like the Del Monte.
Yeah.
And Howard Lewis specifically went to bat for the Al Lewis store and said, they got my Irish up, and he preserved that. And then shortly after, it was made a state landmark. So of significance to the entire state, not just locally significant. But what's really remarkable about the Al-Louis store is that the interior remains the same as it was in 1885. Talking about the murals in the coffee shop in El Paso, or in Paso Robles, it's very hard to, we don't really have a mechanisms to have people preserve interiors. The one mechanism we can kind of do a contract through Mills Act, but essentially the way we do historic preservation is what's visible from the public right-of-way.
I also would suggest that the Paso Robles Inn is clearly an historic building.
Yeah.
I mean, that is a landmark in Paso Robles, for sure.
Yeah, what's left of it. But some of the, you know, sometimes it's something that's not obvious, like, you know, motels that represent a particular era in our history that you don't want to forget. It's kind of like, and this is a kind of a weird example, but someone was complaining to me the other day that now Mary Poppins is rated PG because of racism in it. And I said it should be rated X because of Dick Van Dyke's Cockney accent, that nobody under the age of 18 should hear that. But you know, some things do not age very well. And an example is my old boss in New York was, who loved Breakfast at Tiffany's, the movie, showed it to some Japanese people before remembering Mickey Rooney's horrible, horrible, horrible yellow face comic, just which is not in the book, although there is a lot of racism in the book. But, you know, so Atascadero was an all-white town, but the way it was constructed is important to remember as a utopian community.
On the Stolberg text line, listeners asking, what about churches? Can they be preserved?
That's a very interesting question. Because of the separation of church and state in America, the National Register can only preserve a church if it is historically important or architecturally important for some reason other than religion. That was the standard that they had.
Well, the Presbyterian Church downtown comes to mind.
Yeah, that is a that's a really interesting building. It's of wonderful Bishop Peak granite, which was used only very briefly in buildings downtown. It is modeled after the St. Giles in Stoke Poges, if you want a ridiculous sounding village, whose significance was that Thomas Gray wrote elegy written in a country churchyard, which was the most read English poem of the 19th century. It was this hugely important poem. And so all of these churches were designed claiming to look like that, and none of them looked like that, and our Presbyterian church is the only one that looks like that. So, yeah, that could be landmarked for its architecture.
And then St. Stephen's, the Episcopal
Church? Yeah, that's a really interesting church. That's also modeled
on Pismo Street.
Yeah, that's a wooden building that is modeled on a stone medieval church in Cambridgeshire, England, which was used by the Anglican Evangelical Society of the time as the simplest model for a frontier church. So notice with that church that Dave is smiling because he sees me getting very animated and waving my arms around.
You're into the topic.
Which you can't see on radio that I'm waving my arms around. But if you notice that church, it is the bell tower is incorporated into the wall. And that's just an example of it was as efficient design as possible. So you didn't have to build a separate bell tower. There's a church in the Central Valley, or a church hall that has been a national landmark for being the site where Cesar Chavez organized a strike, and they originally didn't want to put it on because the tower on it had been removed, but the argument was the tower had nothing to do with what was going on, the organization of the strike.
So I just want to point out to our listeners that Professor Papp is doing all this without notes. I can't keep up with your brain.
Neither can I. But that's why I want to be hear from people out there. It's just so much fun to go. So speaking of people without notes, when I went out to do this talk at Morro Bay, I bicycled out ahead of time and got a flat tire, as is my wont on Highway 1, to Morro Bay. And when I got there, I called up Eric Meyer. local, equal busybody to myself, but really interesting guy, really interesting local Morro Bay guy, who designs shoes that I don't happen to be wearing today, but he designs really great shoes. Amongst other things, his father was built buildings out in Morro Bay, designed the lighting fixtures for a very interesting building, that all of you who drive through San Luis Obispo have seen on the way out to Morro Bay just before you leave San Luis. A lot of people think it's by Frank Lloyd Wright. It's actually by, Warren Leopold. It is 84 Santa Rosa. It's a medical clinic, and it looks like an obelisk with a building behind that's kind of like a seagull. It has these two wings on it. It's right by Sierra Vista Hospital, but yes. On Highway 1.
Yes, yes.
After Aladdin's bail bonds.
Some kind of little, it's like a medical clinic or something?
Yeah, it's a medical clinic. All the furniture was designed by Leopold as well. Warren Leopold is discussed in Henry Miller's Big Sur and the Oranges of Hieronymus Bosch, which is a wonderful book about Big Sur, or the Big Sur, as I call it, because it's for El Sur Grande. But that's a shibboleth. People in Big Sur don't put the, and I put the. Be that as it may, Warren Leopold, he talks about Warren Leopold as wanting to live with his family in a tent or under a rock. And when you look at that building, you realize it's like a tent or like a rock. It spans out over the creek. It's cantilevered out. And there's actually a glass coffee table in it in the lobby that you can look down at the creek from it. It's an amazing building.
I've never been inside.
Warren Leopold, on his gravestone, is engraved, "Not a licensed architect," which is how he always signed himself. He was forced to always bring in an architect, a licensed architect, to approve his designs.
And now it's on his headstone.
And now it's on his headstone, because that's how he identified himself.
All right. Unfortunately, our time is up. Boy, Dr. Papp really has the stories. The book is Slow County Architecture, available however you get books. I got 20 seconds for a final thought, sir.
So, Eric Meyer drove me around Morro Bay, and boy, does he have a lot of memories and a lot of insight. So that's what's important. I'm an architectural historian, but what's important is what the people who live there say to me and remember about those communities.
Our memories are important to be treasured.
Yeah.
Long after the buildings are gone.
In their physical form as well.
Yeah. Thank you, sir. Appreciate it. Off we go. News, traffic, weather. Get ready. 4 o'clock hour starts now.
The 920 KBEC Podcast Network is presented by the Slo County Real Estate Podcast with Hal Swayze. Up-to-date information on the local real estate market on your time. New episodes weekly at the podcast link at 920kbec.com and wherever you get your podcasts. California DRE 0111911.